Joining us now is Randall Ray, who's a professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, as well as a research director at the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability and senior scholar at the Levy Economics Institute of Bard College in New York. His books include Understanding Modern Money, The Key to Full Employment and Price Stability, Money and Credit in Capitalist Economies, and his latest book is Modern Money Theory, a Primer on Macroeconomics for Sovereign Monetary Systems. Welcome to Background Briefing, Randall Ray.
Hi.
And obviously we've been watching with some bemusement perhaps, but largely with horror at the dysfunction of our federal government as the Congress convened over the Christmas break without dealing with this so-called fiscal cliff that they've invented as a crisis. Then they've walked away from it, and even the Speaker himself was humiliated by his own Tea Party caucus, who went to the mat for the millionaires and billionaires. Heavens forbid that they should pay more in taxes. I'm speaking with, I think, evident disgust, but tell me how you feel about it, Randall Ray.
Yeah, well, the whole thing looked orchestrated from the very beginning. Everyone remembers the debt limit debate and Republicans refusing to go along with raising that without some kind of fiscal cuts and moving toward balanced budgets and all that. And so they postponed the whole thing by creating this fiscal cliff. And it looked to me like the whole purpose of this was to give the Democrats cover for cutting popular social programs. But finally, they come down to the very end here. And I think the Democrats probably would have given in on that, the Republicans just would not give in on tax increases at all, and the whole thing fell apart.
Well, one of the things that worries me, and I spoke the other day with Jeffrey Sachs about this, he's equally concerned, is that whether it's Obama's plan or Boehner's plan or a combination of both, they will cut the discretionary spending part of the budget down to its lowest level since the Eisenhower administration. And effectively what you'll have left is a government that is a war machine and a pension plan. And the whole point of discretionary spending, that's all of the other things that make life worthwhile and gives government purpose and is the measure of our civilization. That's what they're cutting to the bone.
That is extremely troubling. I saw those numbers too. Effectively, we're going to get rid of everything except Social Security, which I think will be cut significantly, Medicare, which will be cut significantly, and then the military. So it's really, really shocking that we're going to go, well, we're already partway into this century, but we're going to do this without funding for education, without funding for research, without funding for a transportation system that we need. We got one in the 50s and 60s, and we've basically done nothing since then. It's just shocking that our politicians, elected representatives, are willing to go this route.
So, I take it that you would agree with me that the American people don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, you know, creating this deficit hysteria, and deficits sound scary, and you get the far right wing, the Pete Peterson-funded people talking about $70 trillion of unfunded commitments and so on. So the population is scared. I think that, you know, this is an application of the shock doctrine. Let's shock them with these huge numbers, and then we can get what we want. So I think that that's a big part of the story. They're scared. And then the other part of the story is that the whole public discussion is about really non-issues at all. And no one is focusing on it, what it really means to go through this next century with no federal support for all the stuff that we need in order to remain competitive in a global economy.
So again, I'm speaking with Randall Ray, who's a professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, as well as a research director at the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability and a senior scholar at the Levy Economics Institute of Bard College in New York. His latest book is Modern Money Theory, a Primer on Macroeconomics for Sovereign Monetary Systems. So what is it going to take then, Randall Ray, to wake up the American people? Apparently our press is not doing anything about it. They've just gone along with this phony framing of a fiscal cliff and turned it into a piece of cheap theatrics. They're just interested in talking about process and not context and results. The president seems to be more interested in being a backroom negotiator than having a debate with the United States and its people. I mean, you'd think that instead of these ad hoc emergency deals where every time the debt limit has to be raised, the Republican Tea Party has a tantrum and holds the whole full faith and credit of the United States at hostage, and we limp along as a result of that from crisis to crisis. Don't you think it requires, you know, an economic vision, that somebody ought to step up and say, you know, this is what we should be doing? We're the richest country on earth, and it's just an absolute crime that we are involved in these self-inflicted wounds, because we're a healthy economy on the mend, but these clowns in Washington are shooting us in the foot.
You mentioned President Obama, and although he has said some good things in the past couple of weeks, he bears a lot of responsibility. During his first campaign and all through his first term in office, he kept saying the federal government has run out of money. He kept saying, I'm sorry, but there's nothing we can do. We've run out of money. I mean, this is just absolutely a false statement. It's very misleading, and it added to the fear that the public has, oh, no, our federal government has run out of money. You know, it cannot happen. It's a sovereign government. It can't possibly run out of money. No more than the scorekeeper at Fenway Park can run out of runs to award to the Boston Red Sox. The money is it's a scorekeeping thing. That's what I'm trying to emphasize in this book, trying to explain how the government actually spends. It credits accounts, and this shouldn't be, it's not controversial. I mean, this is a description of the way the government actually spends, but it also shouldn't be scary to the public. And so I think it's just irresponsible of Obama to talk about running out of money. And of course, the second thing that he's done all along that's absolutely terrible is protected Wall Street. And Wall Street did create a real crisis. Now, the deficit, the government debt, that is not a real crisis. Wall Street created a real crisis, and we've done nothing about that.
Well, you would think then that the public would, would be up in arms because they don't know how bad it is, and they don't know how much of their government's going to be eviscerated. But I think one of the things that keeps them sort of ignorant, if you will, is this argument over taxes and the belief that we pay too much in taxes, which we don't, and we don't have a debate about what we get back for our taxes, which is how the social democracies in Europe and other countries operate. So it seems to me that Obama is playing along with that in not wanting to tell the American people that it's not just the millionaires and billionaires who should pay more taxes. Everybody should. We're way down in terms of our revenues.
Well, yes. The problem is that since about 1974, average Americans have seen no increase whatsoever in their income. And for the bottom half of the population, their income in real terms is actually lower now than it was. Americans are not used to living through way more than a generation with no improvement at all in their standard of living, except by going into debt. And so the way that the average American looks at this is that, okay, my income is not increased. I got heavily into debt. Now I'm underwater in my mortgage, and you want to raise taxes on me? They believe, and I think with justification, that they're overburdened high gasoline prices and so on, and they can't afford higher taxes. So the solution for most Americans is we need jobs, we need wages to increase, and then we could ask them to pay more taxes. Now, of course, I'm not now talking about the very top, the top 1%, or possibly the top 3 or 4%, who've had just tremendous, unbelievable increases of their income, and at the same time, tremendous, unbelievable reduction in their taxes. And, of course, that is who the Tea Party and the Republicans in general are protecting from any tax increase. And so I think I'm agreeing with most of your story, but not quite all of it. So if we could get jobs and if we could get people some decent mortgages that they could afford, and if we can get them wage growth, then I would agree that we need to take more than the current 17% or so of income on average in taxes.
Well, of course, everything you're saying is the opposite of the notion of austerity, and that's what the Republicans and Pete Peterson, the Wall Street billionaire, who's the major deficit hawk, they're pushing that line that we have to tighten our belts, except the rich don't have to tighten their belts, and that's the deep unfairness of it. And if they go the austerity route, we've seen what happened in Europe. It's a catastrophe for everybody except the super rich. So where is the low-hanging fruit then in terms of, obviously, you shouldn't tax the middle class at this point at all because of the state of the economy and it hasn't come back. But in terms of at least doing something about revenues. And one of the ironies is that going off the fiscal cliff will actually do something about revenues more than these negotiations that they're doing. So, you know, they're going to do more damage to the discretional budget, what's left of it, through negotiation than would happen with us going off the fiscal cliff.
Yeah, well, I think it's very hard to come up with a justification for not allowing the tax rates on the richest Americans to go back up. In other words, let that part of the Bush tax cuts expire. It's just hard to make an argument that they should not be paying higher tax rates when we have a presidential candidate who's a multimillionaire who pays a lower tax rate than, his lowest paid secretary. There's obviously something wrong with that. So, yes, I agree with that. I think that most of our focus, though, should be on trying to save the important programs. Social Security, which has been under attack, and unfortunately the Democrats have gotten on board with the attacks. Medicare, why do the conservatives and Wall Street, which has bought a lot of the Democrats, hate Medicare so much? Because it offers a shining example of the kind of medical care system we could have for all Americans. It works, it's efficient, it's very cheap. That's why they want to cut it. And then the other thing we were talking about, it's crazy to reduce spending on education, on our infrastructure that's falling down, and that is falling behind first-class world standards. So I would focus more of my anger on the spending. Let's get the economy under recovery. And then if we need to raise taxes on everyone below the top 2% or so, then we can talk about that at that time.
So is there any reason for us to hope that we're going to get real? There's going to be a real discussion as opposed to this phony posturing over this completely trumped up fiscal cliff?
It's very hard to see where that would come from. I think what people are probably very worried about the January 2nd date. It's looking likely that there will be some kind of a stopgap measure President Obama has talked about extending the unemployment benefits for the long-term unemployed instead of letting that expire. So that could well happen. I think it's important to extend the unemployment benefits. There aren't obviously jobs for those long-term unemployed, so it doesn't make sense to cut their unemployment benefits and, you know, reduce them to living in the streets. So I think we're going to get some postponements. The president wants to let the tax cuts expire on those above $250,000. Maybe that has some chance of going through. I don't know. But the fact is, we're not going to fall off a fiscal cliff. The gradually, there will be some fiscal headwinds as tax rates go back up. If the payroll taxes go back up, that's going to hit every working American. But it's, you know, it's a sort of a gradual cutting into their take-home pay, so that the economy will very gradually slow down if we go over the cliff. Some people are worried about the ratings agencies downgrading us, as if ratings agencies have any idea of what they're doing, especially when it comes to rating creditworthiness of sovereign governments that cannot be forced into default. I think markets already understand that the credit ratings make absolutely no difference whatsoever for a sovereign country like the U.S. So at most, we're going to see the stock market go down for a day or two, and then it'll go right back up when they realize it's much ado about nothing. So I don't think going over the cliff is anything like, you know, jumping off a cliff. It'll be a very gradual erosion that could push us back into recession.
Again, I speak with Randall Ray, who's a professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, as well as a research director at the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability and a senior scholar at the Levy Economics Institute of Bard College in New York. He's the author of the new book, Modern Money Theory, a Primer on Macroeconomics for Sovereign Monetary Systems. So if a deal is made, of course, you know, Boehner, I think, is pretty much finished. He's got so many knives in his back. So it's a wonder the guy, he's starting to look like a character out of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. He's probably going to have whatever he'll deliver it with the Democratic votes. So that's going to be a heavy lift, isn't it?
So what has to happen is that the voters have to let their representatives know, especially the Democrats, that they don't want any grand betrayal there. They don't want to see the retirement ages lifted. They don't want to see benefits cut through changing the way that the inflation is calculated for the purposes of the cost of living adjustments. Because I think that the most likely scenario is the Democrats are going to give in on those things, and that leads to lower living standards for today's and tomorrow's seniors. So that's what needs to be stopped.
So again, I guess we're hoping that the sleeping giant awakes. No indication, but do you think that? I mean, the worst part of this is that they announce the deal after it's made, and they vote on it, and then the public find out how much they've been screwed.
Unfortunately, that could well happen. It's very hard to get the public focused on something that is hard to understand in an atmosphere of crisis, and where most of the effects are going to come on very gradually and largely in the future. So that, I mean, we can do a deal such as we won't raise the retirement age for anyone who's under age 30, anyone over age 30, so that it's only the young people who are going to get what effectively is a benefit cut, and it's far in the future. So those are the kinds of cuts they probably are going to make, and it's very hard to get people up in arms about that. I mean, not in the literal sense, but
sure.
I mean, trying to prevent the policymakers from doing that. Because if you do surveys of young people, many of them have already become convinced that they're not going to be able to collect Social Security anyway because of all of this hysteria about the program going bankrupt.
Well, I was going to say just in the last couple of minutes here, Randall Ray, the whole thing is so bogus, though. When Pete Peterson and the deficit hawks say the sky is falling, and we are, it's true that if nothing is done, the debt will become unsustainable. But that doesn't mean that fixes aren't within reach and that don't have to be so damaging to the recovery. The rest of the world, meanwhile, is buying our debt with great enthusiasm. So the idea that we're going broke is just absolutely a lie.
Sure. Whenever there's a crisis, everyone runs into U.S. government debt, knowing that it's the safest thing you can buy on the whole planet. Let me say that the Pete Peterson-funded groups that do these debt calculations through infinite horizons, and they come up with numbers like $70 trillion, this stuff is all just funny calculations. None of this stuff is actually ever going to happen. Nothing fundamental has really changed with regard to the federal government's budget. The reason why we have a $1 trillion budget deficit, it's actually gone down in the past year, is because the economy is so terrible. Now, the economy is not going to be terrible for the next 50 to 70 years, which is what it would take to get these calculations of extremely high debt ratios and growing debt ratios through infinity. When we recover, the budget deficit is automatically going to go down. The overall stance of the federal government's budget has not changed significantly in the past decade. And although we are an aging society, we already are pretty much there. The changes to the budget that will occur over the next 30, 40, 50 years due to demographics are not big. We're talking about shifting 2% more of GDP through the Social Security program to the aged in the future. It's a 2% shift. It's tiny in the big scheme of things. So it's just not true that we have a fundamentally unsustainable budget stance.
Well, Randall Ray, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Randall Ray, as a professor of economics at the University of Missouri, Kansas City, as well as a research director at the Center for Full Employment and Price Stability, and a senior scholar at the Levy Economics Institute of Bard College in New York. His latest book is Modern Money Theory, A Primer on Macroeconomics for Sovereign Monetary Systems. We're going to take a brief station break, and we're back talking about the good news in the future and the bad news in the present.